ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Show. Today, I speak to Matt Jivinski from MoneyLab.co. So Matt has been in this business for a very long time, building sites. He started his first site some 17 years ago, and he's very public about the sites that he works on, the sites that he's building, all over on his blog on MoneyLab.co. So if you're not familiar with him, you should head over there. But you know, he's had one site for, like I say, around 17 years called Swim University. And, you know, he takes us through kind of how that all started, how that all began, and, you know, where it is today. And like, hasn't it always been easy? Hasn't it always been plain sailing? And, you know, the great thing about Matt's blog is that it's really real. It's really authentic. Like it doesn't try and sell you the dream. It doesn't try and sell you like things that happen fast. You know, it's a genuine story, really, the Swim University story of like, you know, where it all began, and it did take a long time to get going, but now it makes some seriously good money, and you know, allows him to do you know, a lot of other things that, you know, not have a day job and still make a very healthy living. So we talk about that. We talk about some of the other sites that he's kind of started and failed, and podcasts he's been involved in, and the other thing about his site is that he runs experiments as well. Like, so he runs public experiments in things that he's trying out for, you know, MoneyLab generally, but, you know, it could be all sorts of things. And he kind of just shares the results kind of openly, but there's no like pretense or anything about it. It's really interesting. So I think, you know, you'll enjoy the show because, you know, he's just, you know, a matter of fact kind of guy. So yeah, we talk, you know, about all sorts of things. We talk also that he's got was involved in a plugin. He's got a theme. He runs courses. You know, he does a lot of different things, and has been in the game for a long time. Has kind of got a really kind of practical view on kind of how to build affiliate sites and content sites. So, without further ado, I'll get on with the interview.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome back to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I'm speaking with Matt Jivinski. I almost got that right, I think, from MoneyLab.co. I'd just like to say welcome. Welcome, Matt. Thanks for taking the time.
Ed, yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. So I think, you know, to get things started, it'd be really cool for, you know, I've been following your stuff for a long time, and you've got some really cool case studies that you're very public about on your site over the years. And and I think, you know, what I love about your stuff is, you know, it's just really authentic. You know, you kind of say, you know, this is a 17-year journey with like 12 failures and to get here. And it's, you know, it's cool to kind of see that, you know, it just wasn't overnight success, you know? And so,
yeah.
I think it'd be really cool for you to share in your own words a little bit about yourself. You know, to get things started. So.
My name's Matt. I don't know how far or how deep or how shallow do you want me to go with, talking about myself, which is not something I love doing, but I run a site called Swim University, which is teaching people how to take care of their pools and hot tubs. And I've done that since 2006. And that's kind of like my big thing. And then a lot of what I talk about, or a lot of like the, all the work that I've done behind the scenes is now sort of in front of the scenes, or the scenes, at moneylab.co. So moneylab.co is sort of showing you how I built Swim University, since 2006, and all the failures in between.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. So Swim University, right, was like, I mean, that wasn't just a, you didn't just pluck that niche out of the air, right? That was a job, like, for you in the beginning.
No. I don't really, you know, that was something I did, obviously, because like when you get into like the authority site or the niche site kind of arena, you start to, you know, just pull a, you just know about stupid little tiny niches all over the place, because you got to do all that research. But no, I was in the pool industry. That was my first summer job. I was 13 and I worked at a pool store and kind of worked my way up and out of that store into another store, into corporate, the corporate world, and just have been in the industry, not doing online, you know, business, or not owning my own business, you know, since I was 13. So I, you know, it wasn't until, you know, 2004, 2006, when I decided to actually take all of my all my knowledge and put it online. So, you know, it was, no, it's not nothing I plucked out of the air. It plucked me. That's how that worked.
But be careful how you say that. Yeah. But,
oh yeah, yeah. No, I got plucked in the, I got plucked
in the pool. Yeah.
Yeah. I got plucked in the pool.
Yeah.
In the ground.
I mean, when you first started Swim University, you know, did you have kind of the foresight for this being like a long-term, like, online business, like you do today, like you understand about the online world and growing niche sites and making money from them? It was a long time ago, right? It was like,
yeah, I knew that it was my future. Like, as soon as I started it, it was my first real good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had other business ideas and they've kind of come and gone, and I've started other niche sites kind of in between, but I knew that one was going to work just because, I knew it was underserved. I knew it was something I knew inside and out. So like, I knew how to design the site. I knew how to like make a site. That's kind of my background, or that was sort of my side gig while I was working at the pool store, was learning website design. And so I kind of knew both worlds really well. And when I did it, it was like 7 years of me doing it, you know, kind of on the side when I got home from work, you know, and not really giving it my all. And then when I got the opportunity to, like, I basically got an opportunity to get laid off. And I've been waiting for that day for a long time. I missed my opportunity when I was younger. I had an opportunity to collect unemployment, and I didn't even know it was possible for me to do, because I had gotten laid off at the pool company for the winter time, which apparently was a normal thing that happened at that company. I was fairly new to it. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'm let go, because they didn't need to staff the pool company in the wintertime, you know, in New Jersey. So I figured I had to go get another job. So I went and worked at Target, for the Christmas season and the winter season. And then when I came, and then I got hired back to the same company in March, and everyone asked me what I did on my vacation. And I was like, vacation? I worked at Target. I didn't even go on vacation. They're like, why didn't you collect unemployment? I'm like, I didn't know I could do that. They're like, yeah, you were laid off temporarily. We all collect unemployment and just do it every year. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. So that ever since I found out that was a possibility, I kind of knew that if that ever happened to me, I knew exactly what I was going to do. And it did happen at a different company. And I was like, okay, this is the moment where you have to make Swim University your full-time job.
Cool. So how does that work? Obviously I'm based in the UK, but in the US, some sort of benefit for being unemployed, or is it because you were recently unemployed? Like, what is that?
Yeah, it's just a safety net for those that, you know, if you lose your employment, you're not going to lose out of, you know, if you're actively looking for a new job. It only applies to people who were laid off, not fired. Yeah. If you were fired, that's a different story. But I was laid off because the company was cutting expense, like they were cutting their expenses. And I was in marketing, so I was the first one to kind of go. And my boss didn't want to let me go, but I was like, okay, I'm okay, because I was the only person doing marketing. And so I was like, yes, please, because I knew I was going to get at least a year of unemployment, and I was going to use that money to start. You know, Swimming University was doing okay. It was probably doing like maybe 10 to 20 grand a year, but I knew that if I took this opportunity, I wasn't going to squander. Yeah. So I didn't like go and get another job. I'm like, all right, this is my 1 year runway. And I took it and I did something.
Okay. So it was kind of making enough to fill the gap between your kind of unemployment.
That's
and,
it. Yeah. And I had to, like, the unemployment was basically just my 1 year safety net, because I was still working, doing like side gigs here and there to kind of pay for my lifestyle. And I ended up like selling my home or renting out my house and selling my car and like living on super, super cheap for multiple years while I was, you know, putting all of my time and effort into this, you know, project.
Ah, yeah. Nice. I might be getting this in the wrong order, but am I right in thinking that you got, sack's the right word, but you got kind of pushed out because of one of the articles you wrote on a guest site, guest posting site. Is that right?
That happened before I was laid off at my, I was working at the pool store, I was working in marketing. So I was working like corporate, for multiple stores, and I had some university. I was public about it, not at work, but I was public about it everywhere else. Like my name was on it, I should say. And I knew that was risky. Because I didn't consider it a conflict of interest, because I was teaching people nationwide how to and worldwide how to take care of their pools, and we were only servicing, you know, South Jersey really. But I knew that it was my next move. It was like I was always planning on doing this as like my job. So I ended up, you know, I was working on it, but because I was working at a company, and I was very adamant about like not working on it at work. Like I wasn't that person who would be at work working on my own thing. And then just, you know, that just feels incredibly disingenuous. And so I would only, you know, work on it at home. And it, you know, I got a job offer at the job that I was laid off from later. And so I used it as a leverage point to ask my current boss for more money, which I had tried in the past and I had tried to ask for a raise, and instead I got a 401. He told me to invest in a 401k with the company, which I did. And he was matching up to 5%. And then a month later, he stopped matching altogether for the whole company. So I was like, well, then that wasn't really a raise, was it? It wasn't a raise in the first place. And now it's really not a raise. So I used it as leverage, and he used it as an opportunity to like spy on me basically for the next week. And so he spied on me and found out that I was visiting food blogs work. Because I was like, I was single, and I had to like know what I was going to cook when I went home, and that's why I was looking at food blogs. And then he found out that I had written a guest post on an article called website at the time called FireYourPoolGuy.com, which I, you know, like that site doesn't even exist anymore. It was pretty small to begin with, and he was like, "Don't you see that that's a conflict of interest?" And I'm like, "I don't."
Yeah,
but. I mean, no one knows who I am. I'm not the face of the company. So, you know, no one knows that I worked for that company. So, I did get fired. But I had a job. So it was like he was firing me, and I was going to go take a job with more money. So I'm like, it really wasn't, you know, I just got a week off between jobs, which I was like, all right, you just gave me a week vacation. Thanks for the raise.
That was the raise, yeah. Give you a week off.
Yeah, that was a raise. A week vacation, I guess. Unpaid. So, and then, yeah, then rumors started flying around the company that I was stealing. And I was like, oh, that was not true at all. But, well, you know, here we are.
Okay. So I'm guessing you're not that close to your old boss anymore then.
No, I've talked to him.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
In you know, oh, yeah, post that. Yeah. I mean, it's totally amicable. Yeah, yeah. It was just, you know, it's just like company rumors. Not that he yeah, started yeah. it. No, I still respect the guy totally. And but all my bosses, you know, like, even though I never really wanted to work for any, I don't like working for other people. Like, I've always felt like my own boss, even when I worked for bosses, because, and they treated me like that. So it wasn't like, you know, but I never had like disdain for them by any means.
Yeah.
So it's all's good.
Cool. And how is Swim University monetized?
So when I first started it, you know, the foresight was to affiliate marketing. This is before Amazon had their affiliate program. This was Linkshare. Before that, it was something else. So I was doing an affiliate marketing and I was doing AdSense. But I really thought the money was going to come from like banner advertisement. That's where I kind of, you know, and that was 2006 thinking for sure. And nowadays it's we sell our own digital products. We sell our own online courses and we sell, and we do affiliate marketing as well. So those are the two pieces. We don't do sponsorships anymore, any kind of banner advertisement.
Okay, cool. How do you go about, I mean, how much content do you create for that? Do you still create content regularly for that site? And how much do you invest in that in terms of amount of content, I mean?
So we're, maybe one post a month now.
It's already pretty big.
And it's always, our site has 200 posts on it. And it's kind of had the same number of posts for the last 7 years, maybe. Because mostly what we do is update old stuff and delete stuff that isn't working. Yeah. So we're constantly looking at our site and seeing, okay, this post isn't working. No one cares about this. So we're going to delete it and then we end up writing something new that people do want and replacing it. Or, you know, even those posts that are been doing well for a long time, we'll update those as well. So a lot of what, you know, and the way I kind of approach all of my sites are like a textbook. So instead of coming out with a new story every single time, or a new, like if you compare what I do, I compare a lot of blogs to magazines, right? Where what they do is they're constantly putting out new content every month. Like there's, you know, 20 articles in a new magazine that goes out every month. And you're bound to repeat yourself. Like you're just going to, or you're going to find some new angle, but it's really just this old angle. But the thing about magazines is once you read the magazine, you never go back and read like old magazines really. And that's because the content's usually pretty thin. Like it's not really that great. The way I look at my site is like a textbook where, you know, the it's thick and there's new additions all the time. Mm-hmm. But unlike a textbook, we don't have to print. So, you know, the way we think about it is like we have this core set of articles, we have these chapters, and as new technology and as new information comes out, or, you know, we just constantly look at the same textbook over and over again and see how can we improve this book for the next edition. And so we just do that on a consistent basis.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Cause that, I mean, that's pretty, that's 200 posts is pretty lean really for a content.
Yeah.
Site.
Super lean.
And
yeah,
it's interesting you think about stuff in this way. Cause I heard you also talk on another podcast once and it stayed with me, like about how you, even with your affiliate kind of stuff, you can treat that like your e-commerce store. It's like your inventory.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The way I do affiliate marketing is, and it's only because I understand this world completely, which is I worked at a mom and pop pool store, right? You have a certain square footage of space in your store and you can only put certain things out on the floor or else it starts to get crowded, right? And it starts to get weird. And then with a pool store, unlike a Target or a Walmart or something, with a pool store, people are walking into your front door and they're usually walking in with an issue and they need to talk to somebody. And they're not just going to go, they're not browsing for products. They don't really know what they want because it's like, what, you know, it's like, I'm trying to think of another store that's like this, but it's like going into Home Depot maybe, right? And you have like a problem and a project and there's so much Home Depot stuff, but it's like, what do I actually need for my project? And what's helpful is you go into a store, you talk to somebody, and they literally point you right to their thing. And unlike a Home Depot, a smaller store can't stock a million different versions of one thing. You can only stock one thing. And so when you have that one thing, it better be the best selling, the thing that's going to move off the shelf, because that's how you're going to survive as a retail store, a small retail store. So the way I look at it is, people are coming to my site and they're talking to me, the guy behind the counter, which is my blog post, right? Or my textbook, whatever, however, you know, have mixed metaphors. And then I go, hey, you need pool shock. This is the pool shock that we sell, you know, or you need an algicide, or you need this other chemical, or this robotic cleaner. Like, this is the one we sell, you know? So it's like, we sell this one because we believe in it. We've worked with the manufacturers, you know, we've worked with customers, and this is the one that comes back that everyone seems to be the most happy with. And so it's the only one we stock because it's the only one that we can fit in our store, but we move units, you know, because it is the only one. You don't have to choose,
yeah.
You know, we're choosing for you. So I like to think of my site in the same way, where, you know, when you look at, there's not like a 50 different brands of shock kind of sprawled across my entire website. It's one brand of shock. And if that shock changes, I can click a button and it updates across my whole site.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
cool. That makes sense. That's how it's almost like it's to a certain level of consultancy, right? Like, forget the other products. Like, this is the best one, kind of thing.
No, this is what I recommend. And that's, you know, the article and the YouTube videos and the content, the free stuff, is what gets you to trust what we're saying. And so therefore you're going to trust what we recommend, hopefully, and you're going to buy that thing. And that's how it seems very like obvious and linear, you know?
For sure. I guess it's worth mentioning right now that Swim University, it hasn't always been plain sailing, has it? So, I mean, I think,
Hasn't always been
plain sailing. I don't know if that's a term you're aware of.
What is that word?
So
mean?
Plain sailing. It's I didn't even realize it was like a UK thing, but yeah, plain sailing just means it hasn't always been an easy road. It hasn't always been an easy path. Like, you've had dips, dips and successes and stuff along the way, but like, it's not always been easy, right?
Yeah, bits and bobs, right? Is that what you call it?
Bits and bobs. That's like bits and pieces. That's like odds and ends. That's like, a box full of crap, basically.
Look, I love Ted Lasso, and that's the way that I'm learning all of my English idioms.
Yeah, bits and bobs is when you got a box of screws and screwdrivers and bits and pieces. Yeah. That's bits and bobs. But no, I mean, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, you know, you've had setbacks with Swim University,
yeah, ups and
like
downs,
you know, you got hit by the panda, right? Because of stuff you were doing in the old days. But yeah, back then, like, you know, you were putting stuff on article sites, was it e-zines you were talking about? Like, you know, people think about it, and that was Black Hat, but like, back in the day, that was just SEO, right? That's just what it was.
That was just SEO, yeah.
But
yeah.
So, yeah.
It was wrong, but that's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it now, for sure. But it's easy in hindsight, isn't it? But so you got hit by exactly. Panda, right? Pretty hard.
Panda or Penguin, one of the two. Yeah, but it was 2008, so whenever that was.
Yeah, I feel like it was Panda, but maybe it was Penguin.
Oh, no, maybe it was 2010. It was 2010. So I think it was Panda.
Yeah.
It was one of them. I know that. But I got hit, you know, and I wasn't making a ton of money, but I was getting a lot of traffic. So that did sting, but it didn't hurt my business because I wasn't really, you know, wasn't really making a lot of money. And it's because I was doing the Black Hat stuff, and I was doing, like, I was so concerned about traffic, just like I couldn't think about anything else. And that means that I didn't think about, I was really, really bad at monetizing my site back then. Now I feel like I'm so much better at it. It's sort of now my new focus, but traffic was like the thing that I couldn't, you know, I thought that would solve every single one of my problems, which is like, and it does solve your problem when your idea of monetizing is based on banner advertising, because the only way you make money from that is like a lot of traffic. And same with affiliate marketing. Like, it just takes, you know, not all types of affiliate marketing, but certainly the kind I was doing where like you're selling physical products. You're, and you know, not all of them are extremely expensive and have like a huge monthly recurring revenue of 30%. And, you know, all the software people that are doing affiliate stuff, like they're, you know, or digital product affiliates, you know, they make good money just, you know, with a small audience, but I wasn't doing that kind of work. So, for me, it was like, oh, traffic will solve all the problems. You know, the more traffic I have, the more I'll make money. And that led me down a path of like, you know, starting to do stuff that made no sense for my audience. You know, it's like, I had an article about hot tub sex because I was like, I'd rank number one for it, but I'm like, you know, it wasn't until like 2 or 3 years later where I'm like, you know, not that it was the right people reading that article. Like, it wasn't a bunch of pervs, but like it was, I mean, there was nothing to see, but it wasn't, anybody can have sex in a hot tub. You don't have to own a pool or a hot tub to do that. So, it became like this race to just for numbers, for vanity metrics. And I wasn't really thinking about, well, who am I really trying to target here? If, you know, if I'm trying to target pool owners, you know, I'm using I'm spraying everywhere. Like, I'm not really hitting my target. So,
you know. I get it. Yeah. You want to be careful where you're spraying when you're talking about sex in a hot tub. Yeah, and
I know.
We'll keep going back to this, you know. I don't mean to be like flirting with you, Matt, but you know, seems
no, I mean, this is like, yeah, this is all I, this is, we're constantly, is that a euphemism? Probably. We'll make it one.
Cool. Yeah. So in the early days, you were writing all the articles, but I guess you're not writing them now, right?
So in the early days, I was writing everything and doing all the video, like everything, literally everything, the website, the design, graphics, podcasts, videos, article, right? I mean, every word. And then I started, when I was starting to make good money from it, you know, I started outsourcing the writing, because that to me has always been the most challenging part of my business, and ironically the most important. So I ended up outsourcing for probably like 4 or 5 years, where I had, you know, us either like one or a staff of writers and editors working for that site and my other sites as well. In the last year, it's been just me and my girlfriend running all three sites.
Cool.
So I am back to writing articles again.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, let's before we go on to the other couple of sites that you got as well, like a couple of other things. I was taking a look at the metrics of Swim University and Ahrefs and Semrush before like the call. And did you get hit in June as well for the core update? Because I can see it's at least in those tools, it looks like things are moving down. But.
Yeah, I that looks like that, but I didn't.
Okay.
Like, according to Google Analytics, okay. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I mean, traffic certainly down, but July is always that.
Right.
So I, you know, Ahrefs for me has been not the most reliable when it comes to metrics, and they've had issues with reporting in the past. And so ever since then, it's like every time I look at analytics, or when I look at the difference between Ahrefs and my analytics, I'm like, they tell two different stories. Yeah. And I'm like, well, the only one that's I can trust is Google Analytics, you know, and then look at my sales numbers and make sure that they're not down, you know? So I'm like, well, if that's not down, then I don't really care.
For sure.
But I'm sure I'm losing, like, you know, because we're not updating the site nearly as much. But, and a lot of competition has showed up in the last 2 years in the pool industry because, you know, the pandemic everyone started buying pools. And so everybody rushed in. They'll all be gone a couple of years, maybe next year.
Yeah.
I've been through this for like, you know, 15 years now, where it's like I see this huge crop of new sites start, you know, trying to take advantage of everything, and then they end up like crapping out, and then we're still there, still making videos, still doing articles. You know, it's a test of time type of thing.
And that's the other thing. It's like, you started a YouTube channel, right, for Swim University.
Mm-hmm.
How did that change your business? Yeah.
I mean, I used to say, and I don't, I don't know why I didn't do it, but like, I could tell you that like when I started making videos myself, I felt like everything had changed, where I all of a sudden realized that what I was supposed to do, which is like, and it sounds stupid, but it's like, oh, I'm just supposed to educate people about taking care of the pools and be as thorough as possible. So it's like, okay. And I have always liked video as a person. Like I've been a video editor, like kind of on the side and stuff. And so like, I considered that like a huge change. And then it just became too difficult to do. You know, it's like, you're doing videos, plus you're doing the articles, plus I'm starting other businesses here and there. But then a couple of years ago, we figured out how to be consistent about it. And we switched over to not a video camera approach, but an animation approach. And that allowed us to do a lot more videos a lot faster. So now we're doing a video every single week. And that's Steph's job. She runs that whole department, basically, where she'll, you know, decide what the video needs to be about by reading comments and, you know, just sort of, you know, asking the audience and doing keyword research. And then she writes a script based on like what we've already written on the website, plus any sort of additional research that she needs to do. She sends it to me. I do the VO, you know, I do the voiceover, send it back to her, and then it's animated and it goes up.
Ah, cool.
And we just crossed 100,000 subscribers.
Congratulations.
So this is the year we get our plaque. Yeah. So that was a fun moment. Yeah. We still have to celebrate it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations. That's cool.
Yeah. For a pool company, you know, it's like if we were doing like dance videos or,
well, you did,
you know, mukbang, we'd be crushing it.
Well, you do the odd rap, right? I've seen that.
I did a rap. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that really helped. That was like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that. 7 years ago, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. So for the people who don't know what we're talking about, like, it's nothing secret. Like, there was you got a I don't know what you want to call it, like a piss take kind of rap kind of thing going.
I did a rap about pool care.
Yeah. So, all right. So, okay, your other sites or, well, actually, I don't know what your third site is, because I know you had Roasty Coffee, but you sold that. And then you got Brew Cabin.
Sold
you said
that,
you got three, right?
Uh-huh. And Money Lab.
Oh, Money Lab, of course. Yeah. Okay. So, Roasty Coffee. Again, probably be quite brief on that, I guess, because like you sold it sure. Now, but like, yeah, if you could summarize kind of like the story like, of like what started and why you sold it and that kind of thing.
I started the site because I wanted to see if I could do Swim University again. Like, you know, I took me, you know, at this point, I think it was like 10, 11 years to get Swim University to profitability and just good earn a living from it. And so I was like, well, I know how to do it. I fumbled for 11 years. Like, let me see if I can do it again, but in a completely different industry. And learn from my mistakes. And so I did it for 2 years. We published an article every single week. We had a YouTube channel. We had a course, you know, we did affiliate links. It was making good money until, Amazon in 2018, was that the hit? Yeah. So, right.
Yeah.
So in 2018, they got hit. You know, basically what happened was, you know, they cut commissions, especially in that niche of businesses. Swim University didn't get touched. That got touched in 2020. So I was like, all right, well now, you know, this site is kind of like a burden to me. It was like, I proved what I had to prove to myself, and it, you know, was making okay money, but I'm like, I'm not interested in coffee that much to continue it. Cause it definitely is a competitive space. You know, it's not something you can slack on. And I wasn't going to make a YouTube channel. I didn't have any interest in any of that. So I also went into business debt because I had spent so much money paying writers to write articles for all my sites. And I kind of like went in all in on, you know, hiring a lot of people. And then, you know, those articles, I think, paid off later. But in that moment, that's not the internet. You know, our content creators really don't work that way. Like, you have to kind of establish yourself. So I had about 40 grand in debt. And you know, I would have paid it off the following year, but because my business is seasonal. But yeah, I ended up selling the site because I was like not really interested in it anymore personally. Mm-hmm. So I sold it for $55,000, and that site is doing way better than that now, because obviously if you're going to spend that much money on the site, you're going to put all your assets into it. So yeah, I got out of debt, and I have one less thing to do now. And it was nice to get out of it, to be honest.
Yeah. I totally understand that sentiment. Like, you just, when you're not feeling it anymore, there's no point in carrying on.
Yeah. And there's nothing I can do to help it. Like, I know, like, business wise, I could have done, you know, exactly what the guy who bought it did, but, I didn't want to do it. And so if like, if I'm not going to do it, then I'm not going to do it. And it's just going to suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
So let somebody else have it.
Yeah, for sure. With all your sites, including like Swim University and I guess some Brew Cabin, which we'll come on to. I know you do for Money Lab, mm-hmm. but do you purposely do email marketing? Do you set up emailing lists ideally?
Yeah.
For all of those, yeah.
Oh yeah, they all have one, yeah, for sure.
Do you get much traffic across from, like, referral traffic across from YouTube? Or is it kind of more?
So on Swim University, we do. We this year was the first year where we started to promote our email list. Like, hey, you know, get a free cheat sheet, sign up for our email list, you know, in our videos. And so when we started doing that, yeah, we started getting a lot more email subscribers from YouTube, mm-hmm. which was nice. It gets decent traffic, not as much as obviously just regular Google, but yeah, it certainly is like it's our second biggest, you know, distribution channel for our content for sure. I mean, like it might even end up taking over at some point, you know, but it's been the most, like, conversion rate wise, like YouTube has been the best for us.
Okay. Cool.
Like way better than Google, way better than Pinterest, way better than Facebook, way better than Facebook.
Wow. Interesting.
It's been like, it's like double the conversion rate of everything we have.
Oh, right. Wow. Wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Which is why I think it's the future. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. So yeah, Brew Cabin is another one of your sites. So mm-hmm. Another passion of yours.
Yeah, big one. That's what I'm going to do after this. What do you want to know about that one?
Yeah, so that's is that similar? That's affiliate and products.
Yeah, we have one course I made this year, made it back in February. I have not done a really good job at selling it, but it's there and it's still good. I need to lower the price, I think. We'll see. I don't know. But I've kind of, looked at the site as, you know, I've neglected it for 3 years. You know, so the articles that are there are the articles that are there, and they have not been changed in 3 years. I think I added one article in October of 2020, and that was it. So the site's kind of been steadily declining in traffic because I've just not kept up with it. But again, it's that for me, that was never like me trying to prove myself as a business. It's me just, you know, it gives me a reason to do like fun stuff for my hobby, because my hobby is homebrewing. That's what I do, you know, when I'm not doing computer stuff. And so it's like it gives me permission to do again, like things I wouldn't normally do. So I've kind of shifted more towards YouTube in that space, because that is where everybody is. Everyone's just on YouTube. Yeah. And what's cool about that experience, it's been kind of good and bad, but like that experience has been interesting because I've, you know, like that's a really, you know, interesting niche to be in, that there's not a lot of people, but the people that are there are very hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, they want the content. And so like I've only done 3 videos in the last year, and it's like we've just crossed over 5,000 subscribers, which for that industry is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so especially for 3 videos.
That's what I was thinking. I saw
and
that.
They're all like, yeah, they're all, I mean, if you watch them, you know, part of, you know, the other part of the passion of that project is not just the homebrewing stuff, but I get to flex the like creative muscle that I've always had but never really got to use, which is my music production skills, my video production skills, my editing skill, you know, all that stuff is something that I never really got to push in Swim University or Roasty or any, I mean, Roasty I did a little bit, but like I never really got to push it, you know. And with Brew Cabin, the kind of way I look at it is like every single piece that I put out, it's like a little mini movie kind of thing. And yeah, I just feel like I have like all the creative ability to do whatever I want there. And that's fun. You know, it's not very lucrative, but it's certainly like gives me that outlet. Like I can write music and do like, you know, some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Like my last video is just insane. It's just like an insane video.
Yeah. Like those, I mean, you've got 5,000 subscribers, like you say, from 3 videos. Like, is that all kind of just organic?
Yeah.
Or have you kind of, is that Money Lab people that have come over, do you think? Or?
Oh, I'm sure there's some, but like, no, it's all organic. Yeah. Yeah. It's because, and I kind of knew this going into it. And I, you know, not that I was really trying, not that I really cared, to be honest, but like, I knew, like, I'm a, like, hardcore consumer of all things homebrewing. And most of the homebrewing content that's out there is fine, you know, like just fine, like just talking head, just, you know, like get, you know, here's the information. Like there's nothing really creative about it. There was one channel, and it wasn't even a channel at the time. It was a video podcast, right? When that was a thing. That where they got a little creative with the homebrewing side of things. And there's been like shows like Brewmaster and like Brew Dogs and like shows where they tried to make homebrewing sexy and cool. Yeah. And, but not even Brewmasters, like I guess Brew Dog was probably the closest. Yeah. But it became very formulaic. And there was this one show called Brewing TV that I still my favorite. I still go back and watch old episodes. They haven't done it in a very long time, but I absolutely thought it was the best because it was a really storytelling. And I've never seen anybody do anything close to that ever since. And so I kind of thought, what if I filled that role for myself and for the rest of the people out there who still think that's the best homebrewing show ever made. And so, you know, I'm not doing a show where there's like the same host every week and whatever. I'm kind of approaching it from a very high production value, without spending a lot of money. You know, it's like I'm not hiring like a legit camera crew or anything, but I'm just putting as much time and effort into the script and editing. And I mean, everything's done myself, usually with my iPhone.
Wow.
You know, or like my one camera.
Yeah. Wow. Cause
they're
cool videos. Yeah. That's cool that you did that on.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And I can just, you know, and like, again, I get to flex all of my creative muscles that I really don't get to do in my other businesses. Cause they, you know, it's more about the bottom line. Whereas this one, I'm like, it's just kind of, you know, for me to be proud of, like,
yeah.
for me to go like, hey, do you want to watch this weird video I made? And, about homebrewing, so
yeah, it's like it's kind of fun play thing a little bit for you. Well, you're serious about it, but like it's just fun as well. You don't too worried about the bottom line, like you
right.
said.
And it gives me like permission to spend money, you know, on homebrewing stuff that I probably wouldn't have done had it not been for like, oh, I have an idea for a video, so here's what I'm going to rig this Keezer up with a bunch of lights, and you know, my next project, which you know, do you drink any real ale?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so like that's my next project is to buy like a beer engine and like hook it up and do a real ale from start to finish, which is like I've never really seen done. I've never seen anybody really do it from a homebrew perspective, you know. But I saw one guy do it and it was broken up into multiple parts, but I wanted to make it like one long thing and more for homebrewers for the rest of the world. So it'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds cool. I mean, I think about this one in particular, you know, at least right now, you're not worried about the ROI on these videos or whatever. But like, in general, no. Like what you do, like a lot of people come at it from a different angle. I think probably where you started out with Swim University is that, you know, you're trying to make it a real business. You're building like you're thinking long term. You're not just thinking how much traffic you can get and how many affiliate links can I get on a page. You're thinking, you know, what can I get, make courses out of this? Can I start a YouTube channel? Can I, you know, create an email list and give some value there? Like, this is something that I always try to encourage people to do, is kind of just don't think about that short term. It's just like, think about what it could be and like, how can you make it a real business long term?
I mean, that was like, that's why it's called Swim University, because when I came up with the name, I was trying to think, and I've always done this. It's like, I try to think what could this be, you know, outside of just the internet as well. Like, you know, could it be an actual brand you see on store shelves? You know, can it be, you know, does it encompass multiple things? Like, you know, swimming doesn't have to necessarily be hot tubs and pools. It could be literally anything I push it to. Brew cabin it's not called beer cabin, because then that would be, I can only brew beer. I can brew cider. I can brew wine. I can brew coffee. I can do, you know, kombucha. Like, the sky's the limit. So, and then on top of that, like, when I started Brew Cabin, the initial idea was to have software. I was going to build homebrewing software, because I just never had homebrewing software that I really liked. A lot of it was really confusing. But then this software came out that actually was really good. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to try to compete with this, because I'd rather just be an affiliate, because this is like, he just did such a good job and I've been waiting for so long. And so I was like, okay, well then I'm going to just, you know, be courses and affiliate stuff. But for, you know, the kind of the good part about Brew Cabin is like, I never really kind of had I don't need it to make money. If that makes sense, because it's just my passion. So it's just my hobby. It's like, you know, if you're out there and you're a woodworker and it's like, well, if you want a reason to spend money, extra money on a nice saw, you know, or to maybe get one for free, that's kind of the way I look at Brew Cabin, is it sort of pays for my hobby, you know? So any money that it does make, I can buy grain, I can buy new equipment, I can, you know, just kind of have fun with it.
What software does a brewer need?
It's a recipe development software and inventory tracking, and it's specifically made for home brewers, but pro brewers can use it as well.
Okay.
So it's like batch, you know, it like has a timer built into it. It has like, it tells you when to add things. It helps you formulate recipes. Yeah.
Cool. And I get,
make sure you're hitting the right style.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now you said it makes sense. I'm not in that world, so maybe one day, but yeah, cool. Before we move on from talking about kind of the site specifically, like I was reading your site earlier as well, and it's going through kind of your timeline and stuff, and you mentioned about like the Croc site that you did, where it's quite abusive about the Croc site. You said, fuck, you know, the shitty, like the crappy or the fucking rubbish, like rubber shoes. And then you're like, you're learning from like 4 years was like, Crocs suck. Like, I feel like there's a story there. Like tell us about like what happened there with that site.
Like, that site was one of those, you know, when I mentioned earlier, like we've all kind of gone through and, you know, like, you know, the niche plucked me sort of thing. Well, this was me plucking, you know, niches and niches out of the air. Like, you know, one of the early pieces of advice I got about starting, you know, niche sites was walk around your house and just like write down everything that you have, you own, and start to do keyword research on that. And so I, at one point in my life, owned a pair of Crocs, which at the time was not fucking cool. It was not cool to have Crocs. Today it is, apparently, which is crazy. But yeah, back then it was not. It was awful. And so I was like, oh, let me research, you know, do the keyword research. And it turns out, hey, people are searching for Crocs and there's no information about them. And so I thought, what a great niche. And so I had a site called allaboutcrocs.com at some point. If you go to moneylab.co/crocs, I've recreated the site as a bit. So it's a it's a comedy piece and not to be taken seriously, but it's there. Yeah.
Right. Cool. That's funny.
Yeah. So that's just really not too much of a story. It was just, you know, me doing the classic, and the, you know, this is what a lot of people do. And I'm sure you get this a lot, where it's like, you know, the first question that everybody asks you is like, how did you find your niche? Like, how did you find your niche? How do you do keyword research? It's like, all right, well, you know, that's the kind of garbage you come up with when you do it that way.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, I'm just looking at the site now. It's quite, yeah, it's quite funny. Do you get a refund? Yeah. No.
No.
Cool.
Yeah, it's how to. It's like, I think it's like an ebook on how to wear your Crocs without being made fun of or something like that. Which again, that's a dated reference because apparently it's cool to wear Crocs now.
Yeah. Well,
it's cool to rock.
I'm sure it'll come back in. Like Crocs have become uncool, and then like
go full
circle.
So. Maybe. That's true.
Cool. So I mean, you had like a. We don't have to go into all of them, but like, you know, the truth is you've started quite a lot of sites over the years and kind of and they've fallen by the wayside. That's cool. And I think it's similar to like the podcast. You started quite a few podcasts, or you've been involved in like quite a few podcasts and they've come and gone. So, I mean, tell us about your podcasting. You still work with a few, right?
I don't do any podcasting right now. Okay. I do miss it terribly, but I started podcasting before like it was a thing. Like I think 2000 again. Like this is, man, I want to say like 2006. This is like right when iTunes started, you know, released the idea of a podcast, or audio was a thing, and we just did it. My friend had gotten. Stationed in Afghanistan or Qatar or one of those, during the war. And, he gave me the idea to create a podcast for him to inform him of what was happening back in the States, like local to our area. And so, me and three other friends, every Tuesday, we go over to my friend's apartment and we had this like table set up with four mics and we were all like music, producers. So, you know, they had all the equipment and we had a keyboard and soundboard and, you know, all these mics. And we were, we just did like a shock jockey type of radio show for my friend once a week. And we just basically just send him the file and he would be able to like download it on his iPod at the time. You know, we just did like bits and wrote some stuff here and there and, you know, would, you know, call people and we had a caller, you know, people could call in. It was fun. And then, so I had like this, you know, it's because I've had audio engineering and my dad continues to own a recording studio in our family basement. And I've, you know, kind of been in music production as like just a side thing. And so, When I met Andrew Fiebert, who had a site called Listen Money Matters at the time, listenmoneymatters.com, this was back in 2013, and he had said, you know, hey, why don't we team up? I can help you with some university. You can help me with my site. And at the time, I was really interested in personal finance because I had started my business, and I really needed to get better with money. And so he was sort of just being my friend who was also good with money and could like – I could run things by him and – I was helping him with a site, which it, you know, kind of like ipso facto learning about personal finance at the same time. And we would chat over Skype and his wife was like, hey, you guys are really have a good chemistry. Maybe you guys should start like a podcast. And I was like, well, I know how to do that. Like that's really easy to do. So we ended up starting a podcast in 2013 called Listen Money Matters. And it was supposed to be like, it started as like a shock jockey again. Like that's all I really knew growing up. I used to listen to Preston and Steve in Philadelphia, and you know all the music was like heavier because it was on a heavier station. You know, like heavy music station. So I thought it would be funny to do like a financial podcast where the intro was like heavy metal, and so like I wrote a heavy metal track, and that became the intro. And you know, we kind of come in hot and. Then we were super nervous. So we started drinking, you know, just to kind of like calm our nerves. And then, you know, as a person who is like, who likes drinking, I was like, I would always ask him what he was drinking because he would always have something and I would have something. So we'd ask each other and that became just a part of the show organically. And that did really well. I mean, that's one of the biggest financial podcasts still, I think, to this day. It's still a pretty big show. And I did it for a year, burned out, quit, came back 3 years later, did it for 2 years, and then we just ended up ending the show abruptly, but we ended it. So And then in between that, I had a show called Driven for 8 episodes. And then I had a show called Money Lab for about a year. And then I had a show called Money Lab Live for a couple months. And so I'm still trying to find out, like, to me, podcasting has just been, it's really unfortunate because it's hard to interact. Like, the interaction between the medium and how you would, like, respond are separated. So what I've never been able to figure out is, like, how to get the validation from the audience, you know, while we're doing the show, you know. So I, you know, for years you do this financial show and you're changing people's lives with your information. And then the only time you really know that is when they, like, have to email you. And when they do, they email you everything. And you're like, and that becomes a job in and of itself. And so you never get to this point where you could just say something and somebody could be like, yes, I hear you. You know, it's like, it's not a live audience. And so I thought that moving to a Money Lab Live, a YouTube Live situation would help that. But it honestly, it didn't. I think it just got, like, more niche. And, you know, I own this podcasting equipment. I really want to podcast. I just don't know what's, you know, what the next iteration of me being a broadcaster is
yet.
So we'll find out. Yeah. But I do love it. I love the act of broadcasting. I love talking. So I just don't know what to talk about, I guess, anymore.
Yeah, but it sounds like it won't be long before something pops up.
No, something will come up. It'll probably be if I do anything in the future, it'll be seasonal. I'll tell you that, because I've definitely been thinking about doing it. But the way that I found, you know, doing this for 15 years, I've realized that I really like working in sprints. I really like tackling a project for a month and putting everything I have into it and then dropping it as, like, okay, I'm done this project. I can move on to something else, which is, again, why I do the Brew Cabin videos, because it's sort of like, it gets me away from, like, the monotony of producing, you know, the same pool content over and over and over again. I can kind of, you know, fuck off, really, and just go do this other crazy thing. Yeah. and see, you know, just to kind of, again, give me some space. But I like working in those, like, batches. And so I think podcasting never is, like, supposed to be super consistent. You know, it's like, oh, you got to show up every week. You got to do this thing. And I'm like, well, some weeks I don't feel like showing up and doing that thing. So I'd rather, you know, do 10 episodes and drop them and have them be, like, absolutely gold, as opposed to, like, hey, this is just the thing I'm throwing together this week.
Yeah.
Or having to, like, book guests, which I've had to do for so long, and it's just not something I enjoy.
Yeah.
You learn. Yeah. You learn.
Cool. I think I guess talk a little bit about Money Lab, you know, one of the, If any of the listeners haven't headed over there, go to moneylab.co. It's a great site where you a lot of the stuff you do, you always do a lot of experimentation and kind of you know, before you kind of draw any conclusions, you kind of do it yourself, which I really like. And
and
there's some really, you know, interesting experiments you've done over the years. Like, so it'd be cool to talk about a couple of those. But I guess the first one is, like, you know, the fuck Amazon experiment, which came after the commission rate drop, right? So I think everyone was feeling quiet. A lot of people were feeling that way. That, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, that article really hit because it's not even an experiment. That one is a tough one because it's called Operation Fuck Amazon, right? And it's like, the idea is, yeah, Amazon cut my commissions. I was going to lose half my revenue in my business. And I'm like, okay, what do I have to do to replace this? Like, we have to do it right now and, you know, get off of the Amazon teat. And I think I was just the first, you know, or maybe the loudest person, I should say, to kind of express this visceral disdain for this, you know, company from the affiliate side of things. And so, like, you know, to call it something that visceral, and to be that explicit with, like, you know what, they can go fuck themselves. This is what I'm going to do to, like, get off, you know, this Amazon train. And, like, and it's still something I, like, I'm so glad I did that. And I am constantly trying to think, how am I going to, and this is not just with Amazon, but I constantly look at all these big companies and I'm like, well, they're gonna fuck us at some point. Right. So like, how do you just, you know, Google's continues to do it. It might've just done it to me. I have no idea. I have to look, but like, it's, they're constantly changing their algorithms. They're constantly changing the way they do their business for their own benefit. And if you're not keeping up with that, and you're not, you know, even if you are keeping up with it and you're doing everything you're supposed to do correctly, they still have the magic button to wipe out your business. And so I'm constantly thinking about how to future-proof myself from these big companies and be nimble enough and quick to change directions when I have to. And that article sort of embodies that, like, you know, that idea that, look, you know, we're this scrappy young company that got fucked by this huge company. Like, let's it's really, I'm not hurting them by doing this. I'm just, you know, saving myself and teaching others at the same time how to do it.
Yeah. It's kind of like just a mindset, right? So like making sure that.
Yeah. It's a mindset. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that MoneyLab in general is sort of like it's a playground for me. You know, a lot of them are experiments and challenges. The challenges are more like just for fun, not fun and money, but like the experiments are not really experiments that would work for everybody. They're experiments kind of like self-contained, and it's just like, hey, I'm going to try this thing. I have this idea. Here's my hypothesis. Let me actually do it in real time and share everything that I've done and see what happens at the end.
Yeah. That's cool. Is there any other experiments that, what's been your favorite kind of experiment that you think is worth sharing with the audience?
So one I'm working on now, I'm working on a couple experiments. One's private. I really can't even talk about it. It's only talked about in MoneyLab Pro, which is like, you know, it's the MoneyLab membership site which has all my courses and a community. So I'm talking about it in the community and I'm writing a post there that's kind of private just for people who subscribe. And it's mainly just, I don't want it to be public yet. It will be probably next year or the year after. But for now, it's just like, I want to keep it close to the vest. And the other one I'm working on is I started writing it. I haven't like sat down and made it my focus. It'll probably be my focus in August. But I'm doing extreme email segmentation. So my whole idea, or the things that I've been thinking about, I just published an article right before we jumped on. There's a new article on MoneyLab that's called the Untouchable Online Business Model. And the idea being that, like, if you're extremely generous and you divert and you build out your distribution network and collect as many email addresses in the process, you know, that is a recipe for a sustainable, untouchable, and future-proofed business. Online business specifically, because again, I go back to like the, you know, protecting myself from the big, you know, King Google, who, you know, can click a button and boom, my channel's deleted, or boom, like I'm sandboxed, or, you know, I passed all, you know, it's like, oh, it's hilarious that I passed all their core web vitals. And yet the June update still, according to what you just said, I got hit, but then I don't see that in analytics. Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I'm not scared anymore. I used to be, because, you know, it's back when I was like, I had nothing. Now it's like, well, I started to build out a huge email list of people that if I need to, I can tap for, you know, and create products for and make more things. And so my other thought is, starting to think about how to create a very valuable company that's not necessarily, you know, that may not even be in the revenue side of things, but like, how do you create like a bunch of assets? And one of the things I've been thinking about is obviously building a huge, huge email list of, you know, people that are in my audience that own swimming pools and hot tubs, but just having their email addresses is one way to communicate with them. But what if you knew more information about everybody, like, you know, just, you know, sort of big data, but, you know, doing it in a permission-based sense? And does that email list become valuable in and of itself maybe later down the line when you want to sell the company or whatever? So I'm looking at things to increase the value of what I do, and that means creating more products. That means creating more content. That means, you know, hitting milestones in traffic and in subscribers and in viewership and all of that stuff. Like, those are all things that we've always done. And now we're starting to think more on the back end of things like, well, you know, what happens if we were going to sell this company, you know, 5-10 years from now? You know, how do we make it more valuable? And then in turn, we're end up making it more valuable for ourselves in the short term. So, you know, what my next experiment is going to be about email segmentation, where I want to start collecting information from people about where they are in their, you know, pool owning process, what type of pool they own, do they keep it open year round, like all of those things as like attributes for each person. Yeah. And once we have that knowledge, sort of using that to personalize our newsletters, to, create better sales pages for them that resonate better, create products for them that are better, you know, answer their questions. And again, just being more helpful the more we know, the more helpful we can be.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Are you using ActiveCampaign on the back end for that still?
I am. Yeah. Currently. Yeah.
That's what we're using. Yeah. We like that. Yeah. You can.
Yeah. I like it. I obviously it's like slow and it has bugs and its problems, but it's been, for me, I think it's been the best email provider I've used. And I've used four. Yeah. So that's the fourth one's the, you know, I'm sure there'll be a better one next that I'll move to at some point, but this one's good for now.
It's just super powerful, isn't it? In little things you can do.
But it is very powerful. Yes. You know, but you pay for it.
Oh yeah.
for sure. You know, like $600 a month for this thing. It's like, oof.
Yeah. I mean, it does, you know, if you're using it right in the right way, it will pay for itself, but yeah, it's expensive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay, just a couple of things before we wrap up. You got your finger in quite a lot of different pies. So, you know, you've also created a plugin. You've also created a theme, right? A WordPress theme. So, or at least one plugin, right? But I mean, Lasso is the one I'm referring to.
Right, which I'm no longer a part of, but I cashed out of that.
Did
one.
You? Okay.
But yes. Back in October, I think it was. Yeah. Again, it was one of those things where it just demanded too much of my time and it wasn't, you know, it too much of my time, and it was going to be one of those never ending consistent trains that I can't stand being on. Right. I like to work in sprints, and it wasn't something that was going to allow me to do that. So I had to bail for my own mental health reasons. That was really the only reason. Yeah.
Cool. And Carbonate is your theme, which is the theme you use on your sites as well, right?
All of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've never actually downloaded and used it, but I hear good things about it. I hear people talking good things about it. So
that's good. Yeah. It's just super light. I mean, it's like, I'm surprised that I've never seen a theme like this, but it's really, it's kind of based around a philosophy of the kind of sites that I make, which are, you know, very, very, very lightweight, and it only has what it needs and nothing else. And so, like, if you just use that theme and you follow its philosophy, which is, you know, less is more, it's fast. It's like lightning fast. Yeah. So, and I've made it so that it's like, there's no back end, scripts that run to customize it. Everything's customizable in the HTML, but everything's sort of like labeled and coded so that you know what to change and what not to change as a non-coder.
Yeah, for sure.
And it comes with a course to teach you how to do it too. So it's
I saw that. You can use it for like affiliate sites, right, as well. But has it got any specific affiliate features kind of built in, or is it kind of, you know, you apply plugins to it?
Nope.
Okay.
You could, like, I use Lasso on all my sites, so you can apply Lasso to it. You know, it uses Yoast, but you could switch it to Rank Math if you wanted to. And that's really all it needs, like, to be a, you know, an affiliate site. Yeah. And then it's just like a little customization here and there, change the colors, change the logo, you know, obviously add your own featured images, and you know, it tells you exactly what sizes to make everything, and it's sort of, you know,
yeah,
it's all there.
Cool. Yeah, we'll have to take a look for sure. I've heard good things.
Yeah.
To say. Okay. And I guess this is your opportunity as well. Like, you also run a you also got a few courses, right? That you run on your site. Like, can you tell us a little bit about the courses that you've got?
Yeah. So, right. Currently we have 5 courses, at moneylab.co. So we have a course. The first one I ever made was called Asana for Bloggers, which is my, editorial how I used Asana as my editorial calendar for Swim University and, you know, Brew Cabin and Roasty. Even though I'm not consistent anymore, we used to be very consistent. So all of that is based on the hardcore consistency of publishing every week. But it includes, how we publish YouTube videos every week, how we use it to develop products, courses specifically, how we use it for podcasting and doing, you know, that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in just like, you know, editorial calendar management, that's the way, content calendar management, that's that course. And I don't know how much it costs right now, but then we have a course on SEO that's been, you know, still bulletproof. We have a course on monetization, which currently is called the affiliate marketing video course, but it will be changed to monetization for bloggers probably, or something along those lines. Because we're going to start to get into creating digital products. There is a little section about digital products, affiliate marketing, tracking. We're even maybe getting into different other ways to monetize as well. Maybe some banner advertisement, maybe some, I don't know. I have some tricks up my sleeve there. And then we have a course on page speed specifically. And of course on YouTube, on how to do YouTube. So that's our biggest course right now. And all of those courses you can buy individually on the site, or you can just sign up for MoneyLab Pro, which is $49 a month, and you get access to all 5 of those courses, plus a community where me and a bunch of other entrepreneurs are that are kind of already doing this, you know. So it's not really a beginner's area. It's more of a like a it's pro. It's exactly what the name implies. It's not just, you know, pro because we could charge for it. It's pro because there are pros there. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So what's next for Matt Giovinisi?
Well, I'm working on a 4th video for Brew Cabin. I've been building and filming, converting a chest freezer into a kegerator. And so I've been filming that, and I haven't even sat down to edit it yet, but it's on my list of things to do. I got 3 more videos planned for Brew Cabin. So that's kind of been like where my passion is, but, we have some more products that we're working on in the fall and winter for Swim University. And again, a lot of that's talked about in MoneyLab Pro that I can't make public. And then, yeah, just kind of keeping Swim University afloat, no pun intended, and MoneyLab afloat. I just published an article not, you know, an hour ago. So I haven't even promoted it yet. I got to send an email before I get into the brewery, but yeah. And then working in the brewery and drinking beer and, you know, just trying to, you know, enjoy the rest of 2021 at home.
Yeah. Sounds good. Like a good life to me.
Yeah. It's not bad. Can't complain.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, we'll wrap it up there, Matt. So like, thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And, look forward to what's coming.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. Cheers. Thanks again for tuning in. And I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.